Blog Talk Radio.
From Dallas, Texas, I'm Chad Burleson, and this is The Chad Report. It is Wednesday, January 13th, 2016, or as we call it here in America, Powerball Day.
Yeah.
Join me, as always, awaiting the numbers as well, my partner and co-host, Jeff Rivers.
Hey, how you
Jeff,
doing, Chad?
Do you have the winning numbers?
I think so. Let's hope so this time. We've only got one in like 300 million.
You and
chance, right?
About how many other million people?
Exactly.
And the odds again are, which we'll get to that a little bit more later. I believe it's one in 292 million, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of people excited tonight, and that's, you know, anything that brings America together, even if it's, you know, the chances are so small, it's still kind of, you know, something positive, I think, that people can fantasize about what they would do if they win. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know?
No, not at all.
All right, Jeff. In Washington, President Barack Obama, at the end of his presidency in sight, urged Americans on Tuesday night to rekindle their belief in the promise of change that carried him to the White House, declaring that the United States must not let election year fear and division take hold. Quote, "The future we want," he insisted, "is within our reach, but opportunity and security for American families will only happen if we work together, if we fix our politics," he added. The nation's goals must include, quote, "a rising standard of living and a sustainable, peaceful planet for our kids," President Obama said in his final State of the Union address. At the heart of Obama's address to lawmakers and a primetime television audience was an implicit call to keep Democrats in the White House for a third straight term. Sharply and at times sarcastically, he struck back at rivals who have challenged his economic and national security stewardship, calling it all, quote, "political hot air." In a swipe at some Republican presidential candidates, he warned against voices urging us to fall back into tribes, to scapegoat fellow citizens who don't look like us, or pray like us, or vote like we do, or share the same background. His words were unexpectedly echoed by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who was selected to give the Republican response to Obama's address, underscoring how the heated campaign rhetoric about immigrants and minorities from GOP frontrunner Donald Trump in particular has unnerved some Republican leaders. Haley called on Americans to resist the temptation to, quote, "follow the siren call of the angriest voices." And seeking to shape his own legacy, President Obama ticked through a retrospective of his domestic and foreign policy actions in office, including helping lead the economy back from the brink of depression, taking aggressive action on climate change, and ending a Cold War freeze with Cuba. And what did you think of the president's speech last night, Jeff?
I thought it was excellent. I really did. I was very impressed with it. And, you know, it was just, I don't know, just felt better after hearing him talk, you know. It was just really good. What about you?
I agree. And I thought, you know, well, first off, President Obama's a good speaker. Let's be honest. I don't know that he really doesn't give bad speeches ever, you know.
Right.
Is he Bill Clinton? No. But he's, you know, he's not real far behind. I mean, he's a great speaker. He's a great, you know, I think he's one of the best, really, to be honest with you. I wouldn't compare anyone to President Clinton because that's just that's unfair. But President Obama is one of the best, as far as in my lifetime, I would put him up near the top, you know?
Right. I agree.
I like his line about people that having 30-year jobs, the only ones that they can guarantee they'll have the same job for 30 years are sitting here in this chamber tonight. It's like, boom, a slam at
exactly.
Congressman, you know, who. Great line there. While all this is going on, there was Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan.
Oh, my gosh.
Let me tell you, this blew up all over.
It looks on his face. Oh, it did?
Oh, this was the story of the night. Delivering a State of the Union address undoubtedly is a challenge. House Speaker Paul Ryan says just sitting there is a challenge of its own. In his first interview after Tuesday's big speech, Ryan told Capitol Download about the difficulties of keeping a poker face for an hour while he was visible in the camera shot, staring at the back of President Obama's head. Quote, basically, I disagreed with much of what he had to say, and I just wanted to be respectful and not wince or grimace or do anything, he told the Video Newsmaker series. So I just kind of poker-faced the whole thing, just out of respect for the institution, the office. The State of the Union is a great thing, and I basically wanted to be wallpaper and not be a part of it from an expression point of view. That wasn't meant to signal that he agreed with the president. He said, I guess what I was thinking is every time he was saying something, I'm sort of refuting it in my mind, he said, or if I agree with it, I'm agreeing with it in my mind, or if he's adding up numbers, I'm adding those up in my head. That's basically what I do, and I just have a blank stare on my face, he said, laughing. Well, first of all, obviously he doesn't know what a poker face is because that was the exact opposite of that. And if that's his poker face, he's going to lose every single hand, Jeff.
Right, that's exactly right.
Are you serious? Last night on Facebook, someone was, well, first off, the joke of the night was hilarious. And this was going, making the rounds on Facebook. Many people that I follow and Facebook friends of mine had put a towel over that side of the TV, and it said at the top, I couldn't take it anymore. So you could just see President Obama and Vice President Biden and not see. Because I've never, and I remarked to someone last night that I've seen, and you and I both have seen so many State of the Union speeches in our lifetime, I've never seen anyone act in such an unprofessional manner as Paul Ryan did.
Well, you know, it was all in his nonverbal communication. First off, he's he's looking slightly upward with his nose in the air, you know, like
he was sneering
at everybody
and
the
he
way
was
I look at it. And
yeah, of course.
He looked at
President Obama like he was about ready to pounce on him and kill him. And he was just, whether you agree or disagree or not, you've got to be – that's the President of the United States. I don't care. Again, I'm not – you're the Speaker of the House.
He cocks his head one way as he's listening and then turns it and cocks another, and then his nose is up in the air the whole time. And it just gives the aura of just total – I don't know.
I'm an asshole.
Well, like he's just, trying to show his disagreement with the president, but right behind him, and that they could voice their opinions afterwards. But he needs to sit there and not try to project what he feels to everybody else while he's sitting there. He needs to have, like you said, a better poker face.
Well, and we all know that, and I never thought I'd say this, but I long for the good old days of John Boehner. My God. John Boehner, he may have had that orange tan going on, and he sometimes, and of course, we know how these State of the Unions go, Jeff. They, if it's a Democratic president, then the Democrats will stand up and applaud on things where the Republicans, basically sit on their hands, and vice versa if there's a Republican president. That's just how that goes. But John Boehner and the vice president, whoever is, will always clap, usually in agreement with the president of, like if it's like President Obama, that, Joe Biden would, or Dick Cheney for George W. Bush. And John Boehner never sneered the way that Paul Ryan did. Nancy Pelosi never sneered and made faces at George W. Bush. Newt Gingrich even didn't do that to President Clinton. So I just found it very, everyone did. It was hard at times to concentrate on what President Obama was saying because of the awful look.
Right.
And to call that a poker face? No.
Right. I found myself watching his face more than I did the president's face. And that shouldn't
be. You have my sympathies.
Yeah. And it's like, and I was listening to the president the whole time, but I was just like, God,
Eddie
Munster
is what he looked like.
But anyway, I guess you're going to get to the Kim Davis thing in a minute because I definitely would like to talk about that.
Actually, that's a great lead-in, Jeff. Yes. They're always fashionable. Conservative Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio gave his ticket to Tuesday's State of the Union address to Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk who became a lightning rod last year for refusing to grant marriage licenses to gay couples. Jordan's move sparked controversy just hours before President Obama was set to deliver his final State of the Union, an event filled with pomp and ceremony. It also promised to create some awkward optics for the evening because Obama invited Jim Obergefell to sit in First Lady Michelle Obama's box on Tuesday night. And if you'll remember, Jeff, Jim Obergefell was the plaintiff in last summer's landmark case that legalized same-sex marriage. And that case has transformed the Cincinnati resident into a gay rights activist and political star. So that's how she got into the event. And another thing that was trending big time last night was her outfit. And
well, I'd just like to say something else before you get into her outfit, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
And I heard on a media source that Obama purposefully put four gay couples to surround her.
I saw that too, but then I later saw that that was a satirical thing. So I don't know how much stock to put in. I don't know how much stock to put into that because typically those are handed out. And after I thought about that too, I thought, well, the president does not select. I mean, they select who sits in the box. You know, they did select Jim Obergefell, who I mentioned. I know what you're talking about though, because that was all over the media as well. The gay couples being there from
right.
So
he really did that.
Well, you know, and President Obama touched on that more than once last night, big time.
Yeah,
that was a big part of his speech. And of course. And well, she looks so out of place anyway. The look on her face, which is the same look she always has. It's, you know, Dick Cheney in a dress.
Exactly.
But anyway,
because he wasn't dressed by a gay man, right?
A blind
she
one.
Looked awful.
But anyway.
Exactly. She just looked horrible.
That was from the Betsy Ross line. It's been discontinued. You can find it at your local Big Lots. But, you know, it was just horrible. It looked like some red, white, and blue shawl thing that was, I mean, obviously, the idea was to look patriotic. You're going to the State of the Union, so she, you know,
right.
I think she got that confused with a 4th of July picnic is what it looked like, Jeff, you know.
Right.
You don't wear, I mean, okay, you know. And then the glasses and the hair, it was just, you know, I don't mean to nitpick. Well, yeah, I do. I can't stand the woman, but.
She's a very stupid woman.
Kim Davis, her 15 minutes of fame should be over. You know.
Right. Exactly.
Now, Paul Ryan had more to say. Well, first off, I also want to get back onto I'm getting all over the map here. Nikki Haley, her response last night, the Republican response, was not well received by Republicans at all, and she has been slammed for her response. They thought that she attacked Donald Trump by her line that was aimed at him, which she confirmed today. What he was one of the targets she was talking about as far as the loud voices. You know, they need to be reined in, and she was talking about working together. It was actually one of the best responses, and you and I are Democrats, full disclosure, but we're moderate, you know, we call it like we see it on both sides, you know, and that was one of the best Republican responses or response period that I've seen in a while. It was unifying, it was, you know, however, people like Ann Coulter's quote was Donald Trump should deport her, because if you remember, Nikki Haley's parents she comes from Indian parents, her parents were from India. And was born here, you know, and which I thought, you know, how tacky for Ann Coulter to say that. Donald Trump also went on the attack this morning saying that he's given money to Nikki Haley in the past, about, I think, $7,000 to her campaigns for governor. And but just many Republicans thought that they wanted somebody harder. And a lot of people think that this woman is a vice presidential, has potential to be the nominee. You know, somebody might pick her because she's her Indian descent, and she gained a lot of popularity after the horrible massacre there in Charleston, South Carolina, at the church. But I can't even think of the guy's name, nor do I really care. The one that killed the 9 people. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
And her response to that was magnificent. But she's not going to be the running mate for Donald Trump, apparently, if that's, you know. But what I want to say is Paul Ryan went on to say he gave a scathing response today that the speech's political tone toward Donald Trump in the Republican presidential field, quote, degraded the presidency. He said that Obama made comments unmistakably targeted at Trump, though he didn't mention the GOP frontrunner by name at Tuesday's address. Ryan said he agreed with Obama that Trump's proposal to temporarily ban Muslim immigrants from the United States was a bad idea. Quote, putting a religious test on anybody coming to this country is wrong, the Wisconsin Republican said. We ought to have a security test, not a religious test. That's who we are. But I think it sort of denigrates the presidency to then talk about primary politics in the other party during primaries. That's not what presidents ought to be talking about in the State of the Union addresses, Ryan added. Speaking up for our values and speaking up for our beliefs is one thing, but kind of wading into the primary politics of the other party is just not really what presidents ought to do.
Exactly.
We all have our opinions, I guess.
It's okay for presidential candidates to make racial slurs and things like that, I guess, according to him, I bet.
Well, and back at presidents in the last year, especially a two-term president, they're very loose. They never have to run again. And this is what I tell all my Republican friends who don't like President Obama. I'm like, you know what? And they told me the same thing, and a few of them did when George W. Bush was president. The good news for you is President Obama can never run again. He starts his final year a week from today. He does still have a year in office, one week in 1 year, to be exact. He leaves office January 20th of 2017. But turn the page. You know what I mean? And this talk about impeachment and all this stuff last week, I'm like, first off, by the time you even got around to getting all that, there's a lot that goes into that. He's going to be out of office. It's so stupid.
Right.
You know?
It is.
Turn
it really
the page.
Is. Exactly.
All right. Let's see. Okay, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We've got more news to get on that. But first, on this day in 1982, an Air Florida 737 crashed into Washington, D.C.'s 14th Street Bridge and fell into the Potomac River while trying to take off during a snowstorm, killing 78 people. At the movies, Sharky's Machine, an American drama thriller film starring Burt Reynolds and Brian Keith, was in its fourth straight week at the top of the box office, and the number one song in the land was this.
I'm not afraid to die. superstar Olivia Newton-John and the biggest hit of her career, Physical. Number one for 10 straight weeks and went platinum. And that actually became number one before Thanksgiving of 1981 and ran all the way through January of 1982. So, and saying that's the biggest hit of her career is something, because she had 30 top 40 hits in the span of 26 years. So that's, wow. And again, that's, you know, I've talked about this before. That song has nothing to do with exercise, much like Dolly Parton's Hard Candy Christmas has nothing to do with Christmas. Let's Get Physical has nothing to do with actually any there's nothing left to talk about unless it's horizontally. I think we're getting physical in a little different way than the gym, you know?
We could get exercise, but just in a different way, right?
Exactly. You're right. It's the funnest way. No, when she actually had that hit, this was, and she's told the story many times, when she played Sandy, was cast to play Sandy in Greece, it was life imitating art, basically, because in that movie she goes from, you know, Miss Goody Two Shoes Sandy, innocent Sandy, to bad Sandy, you know what I mean, with the leather coat,
right.
You know, and that's what her career pretty much echoed, that because after that she, because before that she was Miss Kenna Goody Goody with the country pop sound, you know, Have You Never Been Mellow, and all that, and then but Grease gave her an opportunity to go more mainstream pop. And when this song went to radio, or as soon as she made this album, she got very nervous about it because this was going to be the first single, and it was so racy for, I mean, this was considered very racy for 1981 and 82. And she got nervous about it and called her her producer and said that she did not want that to be the first single. And he said, it's too late. It's already gone to radio. And so then she had the idea of, she goes, I want to make a video about exercise then. Because, you know, and that song was actually banned in Utah. So that just shows you we've come a long way.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
But great stuff there from Olivia Newton-John. Let's Get Physical. Biggest hit of the 1980s, by the way, as well. The biggest hit of that decade.
Awesome.
Okay. More politics, Jeff. Where to go first? So much is going on. There's, you know, on both sides. Things are heating up. The bromance is over between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. The contest between the two leading Republican candidates has broken out into open attacks, with Ted Cruz calling Donald Trump rattled and accusing him of embodying, quote, New York values. In an interview on the Howie Carr Show on Tuesday in New Hampshire, Cruz said Trump, quote, may shift into his new rallies to playing New York, New York, because you know Donald comes from New York and he embodies New York values. Listen, Cruz added, the Donald seems to be a little bit rattled. And and he went on to say, he appeared on the Kelly File on Fox News later that night, and when asked about his New York remarks, he repeated that his campaign success has really rattled Donald, and then he cracked, the rest of the country knows what New York values are. Ouch, is what I say to that, Jeff. Really? That's an insult to every New Yorker to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we know, you know, in a general election, we know that the Democrats are going to carry New York. That's a typical blue state, so that's not a big deal. However, in the primaries, New York has a lot of Republican delegates that they send to the convention. So by making that remark, you're just kind of writing off the fact that you're going to get any of those. I guess I don't really understand that. I think that was a mistake to say that.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing on the Democratic side. You know, you don't have to walk away when you're – and that's why the primaries, you know, Democrats hate them, Republicans hate them, because it's a family fight first to get to the general election. And even in the Democratic side, Texas, we know, is probably going to be a red state in the general election. However – and for the Democrats, Texas sends a ton of delegates to the Democratic National Convention. So it's a very important state for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders to Martin O'Malley, I guess.
Yeah.
Do we still even say his name? I guess he's still in it. So, but anyway, no one else said it. But, you know, it's an important state, is what I'm saying. All these huge states are important whether or not you're going to win the general election or not, because in the primaries, the big state sends a lot of delegates, is what I'm trying to say. And basically, right. He just wrote off the New York delegates by saying that. Trump continued to knock Cruz over his qualifications, tweeting, quote, "Sadly, there is no way that Ted Cruz can continue running in the Republican primary unless he can erase his doubt on his eligibility. The Democrats will sue." And he's talking about his eligibility to be the president by saying that he's ringing up the birther thing because Ted Cruz was born in Canada. And apparently, in the Washington Post today, a legal scholar wrote an op-ed that actually gave some bearing to what Donald Trump is saying. Jeff, apparently, there's some kind of document that you're supposed to fill out whenever you, if you're not on a military base, or if you're, you know, even if you have an American parent. And Ted Cruz's mother did not fill out this document. So I don't know. You know, we're getting into technicalities there. A lot of people say, other legal scholars say, this is ridiculous. But clearly this has been a problem for the Cruz candidacy, because Donald Trump has thrown this up, and it's taken away from Ted Cruz's message. And it's exactly what Donald Trump wanted it to do. And that seems to be working, because he's being asked about that constantly. So he also went on to Trump made the comment about the lack of evangelicals from Cuba, where Cruz's father was born. And Ted Cruz replied, "Well, listen, anytime someone is attacking your faith, that starts to suggest they're getting really nervous about what's happening in the race." So these two are going at it very, very hard. One more on the Republican thing, then we'll go to the Democrat. As Jeb Bush's campaign considers whether to bring former President George W. Bush out on the campaign trail, it's clear that Jeb Bush is ready to be the Bush in the spotlight, even if he has a little help from his family. While Bush was meeting with voters Tuesday night following a town hall in Ankeny, Iowa, he met a little boy named Conrad and his older brother. Conrad, with the help of his mom, had asked a question in the town hall about the debt, but apparently his older brother didn't get to ask his question, the boys revealed to Bush after the event. Quote, "You know, big brothers always have to defer once in a while," Bush told the young boys. "But ultimately, big brothers are still big brothers. You know what I mean?" When asked later by CNN about Bush's comment on deferring to brothers, Bush signaled that he's ready to take the mantle. He said, quote, "I did that for a long while, but not anymore." And however, it's not certain when and where Bush 43 might hit the trail, meaning George W., Jeb Bush said in an editorial board meeting with the Des Moines Register on Tuesday that his campaign was working on it, though. As the Florida governor finds himself low in the polls, an appearance by the former president, whose favorability numbers among Republicans have soared in recent years, could help generate some buzz for Jeb Bush ahead of the primaries and caucuses. Quote, "I think he'll do it if it fits his schedule. He's been a big help," Bush said. "We're working on that right now. I don't know." So George W. Bush on the campaign trail for Jeb. What do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, you know what? I think it can't hurt any more than what he already is. You know, he needs to try to pull something out of the hat. And normally I would say keep W away, but I don't think he can get much lower. So go for it.
Because not one person since George W. Bush has left office have asked him to campaign for them. No one, not one Republican.
Right. He needs, Jeb needs to shake things up, and he needs all the help he can get. And maybe that might help in some weird way.
I think you're right. I think it would help in a Republican primary, because clearly George W. Bush, his favorabilities among Republicans are high. However, should Jeb manage to get to the general election, he's got to walk that back. You know what I'm saying? The Democrats will seize on that, and that's all you'll see in ads are those two linking him, saying, if you like George W. Bush, well, you're going to get him again with Jeb. I don't think it's ever going to get to that, because Jeb is sitting at 6% nationally right now, Jeb, and
I think
campaign
it's too late for
you.
Jeb. I really do. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think you're looking at, you know, either Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, or Ted Cruz. I think you're looking at one of them three.
I think you're right. That seems to be the and actually, while the Republican, the next debate is tomorrow night on the Fox Business Channel, and we now know that Carly Fiorina will not be on the main stage. She's been relegated to the amateur hour debate, as we call it, or the happy hour, the undercard debate, to be nicer, I guess. as well as Rand Paul, who said he will not participate if he's on the undercard debate, and that's where he finds himself. So, which is a little surprising because I think he was at 5% in the last poll in Iowa. So I Carly Fiorina, though, she's tanked, Jeff. You know, that what she once had is just, I mean, she's hovering around 1% now. So that was, and plus they're trying to thin this out so people have more time to talk about what they're doing, you know.
Right,
and
I think they should at this point. You know, now it's time, now that the new year's here, it's time to weed out the, you know, I mean, if you're not polling good by this point, you know, it's time to thin them out.
I agree. And also what's gone out the window is the love fest on the Democratic side. It's over. Hillary Clinton blasted Bernie Sanders on Tuesday night for waiting to release a tax plan detailing how he'll pay for proposals like single-payer health insurance and free public college tuition, saying Iowa voters might not get a chance to vet his plan if it's released too late. She also hit Sanders for his relentless focus on income inequality, saying that she too has a long history of addressing the issue, but, quote, it's not the only thing that I talk about. Ouch. The Democratic presidential contender's comments came in an interview with CNN's Allison Camerota after a campaign stop at Iowa State University, where Clinton had turned her stump speech into a sustained attack on Sanders on guns, health insurance, taxes, and more. Quote, Senator Sanders has some very big ideas, but he hasn't yet told anybody how he would pay for them, Clinton told her. And he had promised that he would roll out his tax plans before the Iowa caucus on February 1st, Clinton said. Well, if you wait too long, nobody will have a chance to see them or analyze them. She added, I am very clear about what I would do and how I would pay for it. And Bernie Sanders could break his pledge to release details on how he would pay for his health care plan before the Iowa caucus, according to his top aide. His campaign released details today of how Sanders will pay his $1 trillion infrastructure plan and his $75 billion a year plan to make public college and universities tuition-free. But noticeably absent was his plan to pay for Medicare for All, a price tag that some estimates put at $15 trillion. Jeff Weaver, Sanders' campaign manager, isn't saying when those numbers will be released. Quote, I don't have a date for that, he said earlier this week. Not necessarily before the caucuses, though, is what he said. And
that's trouble.
It's real trouble. The good news for Bernie Sanders is that he has narrowed the gap nationally against Hillary Clinton. The latest poll that came out from CBS, and this is just one poll, has worked. Clinton ahead by 10 points nationally, 51-41. And but Hillary says she's beaten him in another poll. And this will all be sorted out this Sunday night when the Democrats debate on NBC. So look for some lively debates because it's getting crunch time. This is the last time that the Republicans and the Democrats will debate. The Republicans tomorrow night, the Democrats on Sunday night. And the love fest.
So you said
is over
the Republicans tomorrow and the Democrats Sunday.
Correct.
And this is the last
polls
time they'll debate before
Iowa
the
for,
election.
Bernie Sanders has made some strides in Iowa. You know, he's leading her in New Hampshire. Those are the only states where she has a problem. If you look at the rest of the map, she's looks very good.
You said this is the last
question?
Time they'll debate before the primaries.
Before the Iowa caucuses, which are on February 1st. We're only, 28 days away now? Or, 18 days away. This is the 13th, so February 1st are the Iowa caucuses. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the debate tomorrow night. Okay, moving on.
Exactly.
A video, and this story just infuriates me. A video aired today by Iranian state television shows an American sailor apologizing for entering Iranian waters, an embarrassing development for a United States administration trying to paint the service member's quick release as a diplomatic victory. Quote, it was a mistake that was our fault, and we apologize for our mistakes, said the U.S. sailor, who was identified by Iran Press TV as the commander. It was a misunderstanding. We did not mean to go into Iranian territorial water. The Iranian behavior was fantastic while we were here. We thank you very much for your hospitality and your assistance. It's not clear from the video, which also shows the lone female sailor wearing a head covering in accordance with the Islamic tradition, that the sailor was speaking voluntarily, and U.S. officials have not yet said under what circumstances the apology was delivered. A spokesman for Secretary of State John Kerry has made it clear that he has not apologized to Iran. First off, we don't know. Iran says that these sailors entered their Iranian waters, and the other people have disputed that, saying that that's not, they were in international waters, you know. And when I saw these people, they had their hands behind their head. They made them, you know, kneel down. Aren't we supposed to be allies now, Jeff? That's my thing there.
I thought so, too. Yeah, I thought so, too.
If we floated into, say we had 10 sailors that went into Canadian waters or Italian space, do you think that they would treat us the same way? I don't think so. I don't think they would treat.
And you know, they might say, you're in our waters, you know, please leave.
Oh, they would go out and say, hey, you know, find out what's going on, and then say, you know, you can give the Navy time to turn around and go get out of the, they wouldn't take them, detain them, like Iran did.
So is there any sign of them being released soon?
They've been released today. They were released today.
They were released.
Part of that, but here's why I'm furious, though. Another thing that infuriates me, what I said, is the fact that they made the female sailor don a head covering in accordance with Islamic tradition. She had to wear one of those, I don't know what you would call it. I won't say what the street name is for it here, but a head covering, let's just leave it at that. Like, you know, and with she's not Islamic, so I don't, that when I saw that picture, I was furious right then. You know what, these are American soldiers that they shouldn't have to adhere to your tradition. You detain these people, and again, they're about to get $100 billion from us in that agreement, Jeff. So hell yes, they let them go. But the fact that they detained them anyway, they're trying to show that they've got power. It was all, and I don't buy this sailor's admission that it was a mistake for a minute. I think this is all propaganda. I think he was made to say that. And I mean, we'll know this in the coming days. You know, maybe as early as tonight on some of these details. But I just don't buy that. And I don't trust I don't. And Iranian Americans, I'm not talking about these people at all. There's some great people in America from Iran that are just, you know, American citizens, great people. It's the leadership of the country Iran I do not trust. And I just can't imagine. I mean,
I totally agree.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. And then to make her don that, to see that soldier wearing that headscarf, that really upset me too, you know?
Right, exactly.
More than 292 million combinations of numbers will not win tonight's $1.5 billion Powerball jackpot, yet the lines are growing at lottery retailers as time ticks closer to the 10 p.m. Eastern Time cutoff for ticket sales in most states. Why do so many people buy Powerball tickets then, Jeff, when they have virtually no chance of winning the drawing? Quote, it gives you a license to fantasize. We talked about this earlier, said co-director George Lowenstein of the Center for Behavioral Decision Research at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, who has studied the psychology behind lotteries. It's a harmless indulgence as long as you don't spend a lot of money on it. And this jackpot is the largest of any lottery game on record in the world, says Kelly Kropp, a spokeswoman for the Texas Lottery Commission. The thing is, you always want to get the big, you know, the big jackpot, said Ruby Garibay of Phoenix, who snagged two tickets Wednesday. The last ticket I got $4 back, which is great, but, you know, you're kind of like disappointed. And we actually got a little bit of money back. I found out, Jeff, what was it? We got $12 off of some tickets combined or something. If you have the Powerball number, that's worth $4 alone. Just if you have just that power. That's how you get that back. So that Powerball number is very important. And it cannot be. It has to be. That Powerball number has to be that number. It can't be the other numbers. It doesn't matter in what accordance they come in, as long as you have them. But you have to have that one number. It has to be the Powerball number to win the jackpot.
Huh. Yeah. Wow.
And one person said that he said that he had family members pooling, you know, or in a pool. And that was Antonio Golichek of 19 of Farmington Hills, Michigan, who works at his father's restaurant near downtown Detroit. He also said he had a cousin who's put $5,000 into it. And that's related to the danger zone, experts say. Powerball's appeal is harmful when it starts cutting into basic needs for those with little money to begin with. And I agree.
I totally agree. Yeah, that's terrible.
For a chance that small, that's tough, you know?
Absolutely.
And finally, what's it like being a famous rapper and a noted lover of big butts? One Seattle resident got a little taste when his new phone came complete with Sir Mix-a-Lot's old phone number. And, of course, Sir Mix-a-Lot had the hit Baby Got Back, Jeff, from the 90s, as you'll remember. The New York Daily News reports that Jonathan Nichols moved to Seattle from El Paso for law school and wanted a local phone number. But when he switched numbers, he started getting everything from offers of backstage passes and homemade beats to sales calls from luxury car dealerships and, of course, photos of women's butts, reports the Seattle Times. Quote, there were some girls in really short shorts and skimpy tops, obviously turned around showing their big butt, Nichols tells the Daily News. They would say, I know you love us because we got big butts. So. And the line of the, for people that don't know what I'm talking about, the, I like big butts is how that is the first Baby Got Back, the big hit from, what are we talking about, 23 years ago now? But
yeah, wow.
I always try to end with something a little lighter, Jeff, so.
Right.
Only the most important news, or not. Right, in this case, or a little heavier. Right, exactly. Thank you. That's going to do it for the news. The Wide World of Sports is straight ahead. You're listening to The Chad Report. singer-songwriter Babyface and his 11th top 40 hit, Every Time I Close My Eyes. That also had Mariah Carey on backing vocal and Sheila E. on the drums. So,
awesome.
A great, great ballad from Babyface. We saw Babyface in concert, 5 or 6 years ago. Was that?
Seems like it, yeah. Sounds right, yeah.
And he put on it was a great show. A very good show. You know, Babyface writes a
absolutely.
Lot of music, too. And go ahead.
Yeah, I said absolutely. Absolutely. I love his songwriting just as well, though. Awesome.
And to connect what's
just
kind of very, very talented. Yes, he is. And he also, if you remember when from our first song, Olivia Newton-John, he did back when Olivia Newton-John re-released I Honestly Love You in the late 90s. It was a more of a updated version. He sang backup vocal for her on that, if you recall. So
yeah.
A connection there. He has a connection with just about everyone in the music industry. And he's an outstanding guy. A lot of times behind the scenes, and he doesn't get all the recognition he deserves, but he is extremely talented.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Lawrence Phillips, the former football star facing murder charges, was found unresponsive early Wednesday at Kern Valley State Prison and rushed to a hospital where he was pronounced dead, according to California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation spokeswoman Terry Thornton. The death is being investigated as a suspected suicide, according to a press release. Phillips, age 40, was facing the possible death penalty in the alleged murder of his former cellmate at Kern Valley State Prison. At a preliminary hearing on Tuesday, a Superior Court judge ruled that there was sufficient cause to believe Phillips committed murder, according to court records, which cleared the way for a trial that could have ended with Phillips getting the death penalty. Jesse Whitney, attorney who was representing Phillips, said the outcome of the hearing was no surprise, and Phillips thought he would prevail. Quote, there was nothing about his demeanor that made me think he was suicidal at all or depressed, Whitten said. He was very confident about winning this case, and he was even more optimistic about his appeal on his prior cases. And Phillips was allowed to wear civilian clothes to the hearing rather than the prison-issued orange jumpsuit. He said, quote, he was like a kid on Christmas morning. We got his court clothes. He picked them out. They fit really great, so he was really happy. And he started the hearing by telling me, hey, relax, man. I'm going to be held to answer for the murder charges. It's just a formality. And unfortunately, things took a turn for the worse. Phillips was a star running back on the University of Nebraska's national championship teams in 1994 and 95 and a first-round pick, sixth overall in the 1996 NFL draft. He played for 3 seasons with the St. Louis Rams, Miami Dolphins, and San Francisco 49ers. In 2009, he was sentenced to 31 years in prison for 2 separate incidents, driving his car into 3 teenagers and assaulting an ex-girlfriend. So,
wow.
Very sad news there.
Very much is.
Very talented man, and unfortunately, it's all come to an end there. And speaking of the St. Louis Rams, a 21-year odyssey came to an end on Tuesday when NFL owners voted to allow the St. Louis Rams to move to Los Angeles for the 2016 season and gave the San Diego Chargers an option to join them. Their home will ultimately be on the site of the old Hollywood Park racetrack in Inglewood and will what be the league's biggest stadium, a low-slung, glass-roofed football palace with a projected opening in 2019 and a price tag that could approach $3 billion.
Wow.
So
this is supposed
yes.
to overtake
yes.
Arlington? Wow.
Yes. And that's the nature of the beast, Jeff. You know, as we get
right.
more and more, and it's always – and it's unfortunate because this all comes back down to cities building stadiums that are deemed adequate for today's times. You know what I mean? And
right.
San Diego, Oakland – say that again?
Why are they moving? Just not lack
because
of support?
St. Louis did not agree to build a new stadium and also, you know, that they were the L.A. Rams for a very long time before they moved to St. Louis 21
right.
years ago. So they're it's kind of like a homecoming of sorts. But,
right.
you know, it's been so long, I've gotten so used to them being the St. Louis Rams. And
yeah.
you know, they did very well with Kurt Warner. And I mean, they had a heyday there in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's sad for the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, it is.
I know the governor of Missouri is not happy at all. We may see a lawsuit come out of this because he says it goes against the rules. According to Roger Goodell, there's nothing stopping this from happening, and this is a done deal for the Rams for sure. Wow. San Diego Chargers, not necessarily. Same with the Oakland Raiders.
I wonder how many people that'll see that new stadium.
Well, it won't be built until 2019 or be completed. So, they won't be playing in that one until 2019. So I don't know how many it will seat, but an artist rendering shows it, and it looks beautiful. There's like a pool outside. But it's going to be one of those complexes that has entertainment, retail, and housing. You know these. You know what they're putting up now. Every one of these kind of complexes. So, I will say this: Los Angeles is the second biggest city in the nation. So I think it's ridiculous that they don't have an NFL team, and they haven't had one in a long time. So I'm glad to see them getting one. This is not really how I wanted it to happen, though. To be honest with you, Jeff.
I agree.
You know, London has wanted an NFL team, and said they expected to have one within the next 5 years. I said that last year. And what I thought in the scenario in my head was that London and Los Angeles might, because they're not going to just add one team and make, because they needed it to be even. I thought they might add London, give London a team, and then give Los Angeles a team and put one in the American Conference and one in the National, the NFC.
Right.
And, that's not going to happen like that. So I just don't see in the next 5 years anyway, they want an NFL team bad, but I don't know how that's going to work out.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with it, I guess, but, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be a lot more money in plane flights and things like that, you know, to go to games and stuff. And it is the NFL, so, you know.
They're going to have to play late. They're going to have to play later there if that happens, because that's 8:30 a.m.
Right.
You know, that's not
right,
cutting
that's
it.
True. Right.
And then on the East Coast, it's 7:30 a.m., those 8. So that's early to get up and watch, you know. They're going to be evening games if that happens. So,
exactly.
If that, you know, like I said, that's a big if. And going to Arizona, Alabama won its 10th Associated Press National Championship. Congratulations to them. Following its 45-40 victory over Clemson in the college football playoff title game on Monday night, the Crimson Tide have won 4 national titles in the last 7 years, all under Coach Nick Saban. His other titles at Alabama came in 2009, 2011, and 2012. In the 50th game matching the number 1 versus number 2 team, Alabama outscored Clemson in a frantic fourth quarter to win and earned all 61 first-place votes from the Associated Press panel. Clemson won its only national title back in 1981. And Alabama was also a unanimous choice for number 1 in the Amway coaches poll, getting all 56 votes. And this is the 5th time that Alabama has won a national title without being ranked number 1 during the regular season. Alabama running back Derrick Henry is the 16th Heisman Trophy winner to play for the national championship. So, you know, and I posted this the other night. People talk about dynasties all the time. This is a dynasty, okay? This is a dynasty, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And congratulations to the Alabama Crimson Tide once again. In the NBA, in Auburn Hills, Michigan, Tony Parker scored 31 points. LaMarcus Aldridge added 22 points and 13 rebounds. And the San Antonio Spurs beat the Detroit Pistons 109-99 on Tuesday night for their 9th straight victory. Detroit had its 3-game winning streak snapped. And, you know, I've said this before, look out, because all the attention is on Golden State, but San Antonio is, you know, back in form again. And just running down the NBA, in the Western Conference, is the San Antonio Spurs at 34-6. They are 11.5 games ahead of the Dallas Mavericks. In the Northwest Division, it's the Oklahoma City Thunder at 27-12 with a 9-game lead over the Utah Jazz. And the Pacific Division, the Golden State Warriors at 36-2 have an 11-game lead over the Los Angeles Clippers. In the Eastern Conference, Atlantic Division, Toronto Raptors at 24-15 have a 4.5-game lead over both New York and Boston. In the Southeast Division, it's the Atlanta Hawks at 23-15. They have a 1-game lead over the Miami Heat. And the Central Division, the Cleveland Cavaliers at 27-9 have a 5.5-game lead over the Chicago Bulls. Two games nationally televised tonight. Currently underway, the Indiana Pacers are in Boston taking on the Celtics, and a late game tonight at 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 Central, the Miami Heat travel to Los Angeles to take on the Clippers. That's going to do it for sports. The entertainment update is next, right here on The Chad Report.
Tears it falls from my eyes.
From the movie Streets of Fire, the late Dan Hartman and his second top 40 hit, I Can Dream About You. And that is just that's one of those 80s classics that I never tire
of.
I love that song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so do I.
Love it too. I agree.
And very sad because he died at the age of 43. He died on March 22nd, 1994 of a brain tumor. And he was only 43 years old. And people may remember him before that. He was with the Edgar Winter Group from 1972 to 1976. So very talented and a great singer. I love that song. The flow of that song is just, you know?
Absolutely.
Okay, running down the top 10 albums on the Billboard album charts, the Billboard 200. At number 10, Slipping a Notch, 1989 by Taylor Swift. Up a notch from 10 to 9 is Trap Soul by Bryson Tiller. Down 3 to number 8 is Fetty Wap with the self-titled Fetty Wap. At up 5 spots from 12 to 7 is Traveler by Chris Stapleton. Down a couple notches to 6 from 4 is Made in the AM by One Direction. Debuting at number 5, Wildfire by Rachel Platten. Up 2 notches to number 4, Beauty Behind the Madness by The Weeknd. Holding at number 3, Blurry Face by 21 Pilots. Holding at number 2, Purpose by Justin Bieber. And once again, at number 1, 25 by Adele. In the top 5 singles in the country, at number 5, up 4 notches, Stressed Out by 21 Pilots. Holding at number 4, Hotline Bling by Drake. Holding at number 3, Love Yourself by Justin Bieber. Slipping a notch to number 2, Hello by Adele. And moving up from 2 to number 1 is Sorry by Justin Bieber. He has now overtaken Adele for that number 1, the biggest single in the land. Justin Bieber.
Huh.
See, when you keep... This is how you stay in trouble. Cha-ching.
Right.
Ka-ching, I should say.
Right.
Just keep making the money, and you get in trouble, and you're like, you know what? What are they going to do to me?
Right.
No, Justin Bieber is very talented. This is not some throwaway. You know, I'll say this again. He's not a kid. He's a man now. He's a young man. He's talented. He can sing. It's not like some of these people they put up there, and I'm not going to name any names, but you know who I'm talking about, that they're great looking, they can dance, but vocally they're lacking. That is not the case for Justin Bieber, you know?
Exactly.
In the Nielsen ratings, CBS was back to its old ways last week, winning decisively in viewership and seizing the lion's share of the week's most-watched shows, according to the Nielsen Company. Led by its coverage of the AFC wildcard playoff game between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, seen by more than 31 million viewers, CBS placed another dozen primetime shows in the top 20. And just running those down, at number 10, Blue Bloods. CBS 9, American Idol, back in the top 10. Wow. And then, you know, this is American Idol's final season.
Yeah. Jeff.
And if you recall last year, they were not a top 10 show.
Right.
So I guess maybe it's kind of the last hurrah. So glad to see them back in the top 10 because if you remember at one time, not so long ago, about 10 years ago, I guess maybe, this was must-see TV. Everyone talked about the next day about who got voted out. I mean, and everyone who that's the perfect example of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Because when they had Simon, Paula, and Randy, and then Ryan Seacrest hosting, it wasn't until I started tinkering with it that it went down. It was doing just fine, you know.
I agree.
Anyway,
moving
on. At number 8 is Scorpion. At number 7, The Big Bang Theory. At number 6, NCIS New Orleans. All those with CBS. At number 5, the Golden Globe Awards. An entry there for NBC. At 4, NCIS. At number 3, AFC Wildcard pre-kickoff. Both of those CBS. At number 2, the NFC Wildcard pregame on Fox. And at number 1, the AFC Wildcard playoff, Pittsburgh at Cincinnati, CBS. And so there's one network missing from the top 10 this week, Jeff. ABC, shut out. And they're actually, NBC and Fox seems to have more problems than ABC. So, this is football season. Once football season's over, it's a whole new story. You know, then we go back into we'll see. Charlie Sheen is back in the news after undergoing failed experimental HIV treatment in Mexico. The actor is now back on his previously prescribed HIV medication, his manager Mark Berg confirmed. 100%, says Berg. On an episode of the Dr. Oz show, which aired on Tuesday, the actor said he'd stopped taking the HIV medication, which had rendered his disease undetectable in his blood. Sheen revealed 2 months ago he was HIV positive. He called the plan of treatment in Mexico an experiment. His Mexican doctor told Dr. Oz he went so far as to inject himself with Charlie's blood as a show of confidence. But that treatment failed, which Sheen referenced on Dr. Oz. He said, quote, I'm a little off my game because right before I walked out here, I got some results I was disappointed about, said Sheen on the show, which taped last week. I had been non-detectable and checking the blood every week, and then found out the numbers had gone back up. So that's sad to hear that. But now he is saying, though, a new health. He confirmed that it didn't work out like he had hoped, but he's confirmed a new healthy routine that includes no longer drinking. He said it just didn't fit in. Every morning I've been out here shooting baskets, swimming, doing yoga. I do something different every day, he said, while admitting he still smokes. But he said there's no room for drinking. So best go to Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Definitely.
The Recording Academy has announced this year's recipients of its Lifetime Achievement Awards, and they include names from the worlds of rock, jazz, R&B, salsa, and hip-hop. That last bill will be represented by Run DMC, whose Reverend Run Simmons took to Twitter to declare the group the first rappers to receive the honor. Very, very nice. The other honorees include the beloved pop soul group Earth, Wind, and Fire, the band Jefferson Airplane, Linda Ronstadt, Herbie Hancock, and the late greats Ruth Brown and Celia Cruz. So, so glad to see Earth, Wind, and Fire in there. So deserving. And Run DMC as well. And Linda Ronstadt, definitely, too. Wow. That's excellent. NBC, go ahead. Did you want to say something?
I said definitely.
Oh, yeah. You know how I feel about Earth, Wind, and Fire, so.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully that'll be a nice. I'm looking forward. We've got that coming up, too, the Grammys. NBC hopes to reassemble the cast of Friends, but not for an update on the classic comedy that fans had hoped. Instead, it's honoring legendary director James Burrows with a special set to air February 21st, and NBC Entertainment Chairman Robert Greenblatt promises that all six stars will be involved. They just may not be together. Quote, we'd like to get all six of them in the room at the same time, but I'm not sure we can logistically pull it off, he told the Television Critics Association. But it's the Friends cast that they've all agreed to be a part of it, and they're hoping they can be together. And at least one of them is excited. Matt LeBlanc took to Twitter and said, should be a good time. And of the six, it seems like he's doing less than anybody else, so I guess he's got... I'm sure he's thrilled. But anyway.
All right,
Jeff. Celebrity birthday time. Uh-huh. We'll start out today with actor Liam Hemsworth.
I'm going to say.
Not to be confused with Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to say 28.
Minus two. 26 today for Liam. Actor Orlando Bloom.
Say 30.
Plus two, 39 today and holding for Orlando Bloom. Actor Michael Pena is 40. Actor Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, I'm going to say 45.
Plus five, the big 5-0 today for Patrick Dempsey. How's that? And holding up very well. Country singer Trace Adkins is 54. Actress Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Say 55.
Boom. Right on the money. Very good. And last but not least, the flamboyant comedian Rip Taylor is 82 years young. So happy birthday to all those celebrities and any of our listeners celebrating a birthday. You can find Jeff and I on Facebook at Chad Burleson or Jeff Rivers. You can find us on Twitter at Chad Report USA. The Chad Report is distributed by Blog Talk Radio and is a CJ Scorpio Entertainment production. Thanks, everyone.